have a question and answer period now. We all have to do our best to keep the focus on the speaker. It would be nice to share little stories with her, but not to get too long, and remember that questions are more blessed than recitations. So with that word of wisdom, I'm going to turn things back to Tensi.
Okay, so maybe just before the questions start, somebody asked if there was another story, and there was, and I just want to end with this because this is the more recent story that actually came to me on the bus, and I was sitting on the bus and at the next stop entered onto the bus Adriana. And so this is Adriana's story that I think really is emblematic of what an experience of belovedness can take us to. So Adriana is a young mother herself, also in Guadalupe, and a few years back she was in the laundry room of her apartment and was accosted. And there was a struggle, and she was fortunate enough to be able to get away. And this is in a small town, Guadalupe, so it was big. What is something like this happening in Guadalupe? So she actually came to me with a lot of the trauma that she was experiencing. And she, of course, reported it. And a few months later, the perpetrator had been found, and it turns out that the perpetrator was a 13-year-old boy. He had put a mask on, and he was a 13-year-old boy, a neighbor boy that she knew, and had suspected had mental illness. And she was caught in that trauma for a very long time. She, of course, had to go to therapy, and she just couldn't shake it. And now many, many months had passed, and I found her on the bus, and I wanted to ask her how she was doing. And this is what she said. She said that she had actually found healing. And the way that she had found the healing was through her faith. And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I came across the boy's mother, and I saw the look in her eyes and shame that she had, and I realized that she was the mother of the boy, and as a mother, I knew that pain, and I knew I couldn't hold hatred in my heart towards him." She said she was able to forgive him. She didn't want to obviously be around him. She wanted him to get help, and he did. But she was able to, from her woundedness, identify with the mother of the perpetrator. The mother of the perpetrator. So, talk about PhDs, you know? I mean, this woman, who's very simple woman, has a wisdom that I think we all long for. I think we strive for. And we have to give ourselves to the practice of finding that on a daily basis through our prayer, through an experience of belovedness, that, as I was talking with Kathy earlier, when we forget who is giving and who is receiving, because it's all the same. It's this identification. And so we are ministered to as we minister, you know? So I want to end with that, and again, thank you so much, and open it to any questions or thoughts or comments that any of you all have.
I love what you're doing, and I'm so curious. about the ends of some of these stories. What did you do for the paralyzed man? What did happen to the woman with the metastasized breast cancer?
Okay.
What do you do for these people when they come to you, which I'm sure you've been too modest to talk about, but would you please?
Well, you know, and you all know this, I'm sure, more than me. When you're around long enough, you realize that death happens. You know, they say shit happens, but death happens. So the woman with the 8 kids, she actually died in a hospital room, and Dennis and I were there with her as she took her last breaths. And maybe I'll just end there. I was going to say, and maybe we'll, her husband was so clueless of what was going on that as she was taking her last breath, he showed up with a box of donuts, thinking that she might, like, rally and eat some donuts with him, you know? So, you know, and even that story, right? Like, there's comedy and even the tragedy, and that's why community is so helpful, and so much of what community needs to do is just kind of lighten some of these loads, because they can be heavy, you know? The paralyzed man, Rodolfo, he went through years and years and years of anger, just anger. And he was 23 when he became paralyzed. You know, he couldn't work anymore. His wife now had to start working. The baby that was they were pregnant with when this happened was born. He's now 23. They were at our wedding. The relationships continue, and so and that's what I mean about it's just not a doling out. It's a beginning a relationship with, and they were, you know, there at the baptisms of our kids, and so it's a mutuality that we have to have, and obviously not with everybody, but with those key people that continue to transform and offer, you know, stories of transformation that we have to, you know, glean. What is the wisdom? What's the pearl here? So, yeah.
Thank you, Jensi. Mm. I was reading a report from CAUSE about, and I think you participated in the discussions with the farm workers and the conditions that they're suffering under. I remember Dennis had a story of actually going out and spending a day, mm-hmm. as the migrant workers do in Guadalupe. And my question is, what could you share a little bit about what that experience of listening to the stories of the people and documenting what's happening, mm-hmm. with those who feed our farmers markets and grocery stores here, and also what you see as some possibilities for things we can do to bring justice to that group of people?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, we're around farm workers so much, and I mean the fields surround Guadalupe, so we see it really on a daily basis, the work. And of course, now that there are more strawberries, you know, people literally hunched over all day long, picking our strawberries. But it could be broccoli or celery or lettuce or any of the crops around us. And I think because it's around us so much, there is a tendency to forget. And so it's not until over the summer there were visitors from the East Coast, and they kept saying, my God, these are the people that pick our vegetables. These are the people that pick our fruits. And it's so easy to forget when you're at Trader Joe's and you pick up a basket, right, or whatever. So, you know, I would say the best thing to do. I mean, and it's hard and obviously time consuming and the rest, but you know, ask the produce people at the store, where do these things come from? Do you know the workers? There's such a disconnect, right? And, you know, the UFW has a website that they always are asking for people's signatures on bills that are going through. It's hard to say an exact what, but I think the point is, and you know, and this is really for all of us, is that, you know, when you try as much as you can to live a life of integrity and justice, you know, it's sort of like, who's in front of you right now, and what justice do they need right now? And it's sort of like a ripple effect, right? There's obviously, you know, the cause of field workers, which is what we've given ourselves to, but there's also the cause of the people who work in hotels, or the people who clean homes, or the people who, you know, do landscaping. And, you know, and so my idea is that if you do justice here, it will ripple out. You know, it will ripple out. So I would encourage you each to find in your place, in your day-to-day, where are those people that need, are the problem people, right? We called you problem solve. They're not going to solve the problem. How do we, if not solve the problem, how do we try not to add to the problem, you know? How do we try not to add to it? So, you know, and I think it could be as creative and different as there are people in this room. Yeah.
So, Tenzi.
Yes.
I am really curious how you have and Dennis have balanced family life, which is an enormous giving, with the other kind of outside giving. And I'm curious also about how your children, what they're doing now. Uh-huh. I have no idea how
okay.
old they are.
All right, yeah. I love to talk about my kids, actually, as many mothers do, if not most mothers. So, but I want to be careful because so our kids really, for me, is an extension of the miracle, if not perhaps one of the biggest. We didn't think we could get pregnant, and we did, twice. their births were incredible. And their lives are incredible. The way we've approached it, and I think for me, you know, having grown up in a very culturally Cuban home, we ate Cuban, we talked Cuban, we had Cuban, you know, everything around me, it sort of like made me realize like we were different, you know, because there were no other Cubans around. We were different. And so thank God it gave me the freedom to be able to say it's okay to be different. And so Dennis and I early on said, you know what, we're not going to do the television. And we don't. And that was, thank God, a huge, huge gift, because they didn't get bombarded immediately with all of that. And then for a long time, we said no technology. Unfortunately, we've succumbed a little bit there. But so the kids, and you know, and some would say, well, you're isolating them. And I don't think of it as isolating. I think of it as giving them the experience of living who we are. And I sort of think of it as like we're culturally different. We're just different. And the kids know we're different. And so the kids sometimes talk about others as the normals, you know? And because they know that we are not. And we do things a little bit differently. And I'm grateful that they have that. And let me just say, it comes at a price. It's sometimes painful. They're not in the in crowd at all. They're not popular. But they have something altogether different, you know. They blessed me before coming today. They get it. They get it in some mysterious way. They get it. And so, you know, and then of course always a follow-up question, you know, do you need your kids to do this? And the answer is no. What I want more than anything for our kids, what we want for our kids, is that they find their vocation. What gives them passion? What moves them? What has them giving up, whatever it is, or giving to whatever it is, that gets them excited about this gift of life, you know? I don't think, my daughter is more, you know, kind of shares a lot of our, certainly political ideas, our son a little bit, but definitely less so. He talks about, you know, he wants a good house. Great. You know, he'll invite us, hopefully. But I think, you know, because there are times, as we all have, when we're parents and we're just not sure if what we're doing is right and how we're doing it and all of the questions that come in parenting. But I think I can say for my kids that they do know they're loved. They know they're loved. And they know that they're not put on this pedestal, you know, of like the world stops for them, that they are, you know, and now as they get older, helping us in the effort of love. And so it was such a gift, such a huge gift for us to have our kids this year for the first time actually like creating and preparing the programs for our summer camp, you know? And it was like, they got it, and my daughter brings out the guitar. She knows all of three chords. I know all of two. And we were there singing with the kids, and the kids loved it. And my kids understood, oh, this is what we do as a family. This is how we do it, you know? So far, knock on wood. I mean, they're 14 and 15. Things might change, but so far, yeah.
Tell them about the Rosenberg camps where they don't have to be different.
Right, right, yeah. So there is a wonderful, and in fact I would really suggest you all going to their website. It's a wonderful organization called the Rosenberg Fund. And what they do is provide financial assistance to children who are the children of activists. So now for many years our children have been able to receive my daughter piano lessons and my son drum lessons for free because they pay for it. So the Rosenberg Foundation or Fund is excellent. I really recommend it. Oh, I'm sorry. Right, yes. And so the gathering, what they did 2 years ago, I think now, they invite all the recipients of their grants to come together on the East Coast, and all of these activist kids get together, and the parents meet, and the kids meet separately, and yeah, it's exactly right. We saw for the first time, like, all these different kids together, and they're not so different, you know? And it was really, really sweet and so wonderful to be in a group of people where, you know, one father said, well, when I just got out of prison, and my son sort of elbows me, you know? And then, you know, because that is that's the talk. That's where we're all sort of together. And so, yeah, it was wonderful for our kids, for ourselves. And it was, even that trip was all paid for by the Rosenberg Fund. So it's a great, great organization. Right, so the Rosenbergs, I'm sure you all remember, were the couple back in the 50s, yeah, who were actually executed because of the thought that they were spies. And they left two children, a 5-year-old boy and a 10-year-old boy. And now these two boys have grown to be fathers and grandfathers now. And really connected with their loss and their pain and wanted to transform that, and so started a fund for activist kids to just, you know, be able to supplement a little bit of what can sometimes be difficult when your father or mother is in the paper, and difficult when up to quick story, after one of Dennis's arrests, and you know, we go to Vandenberg, and it's really almost for us almost like a nothing thing, because at the time we were going just because Dennis was there, just for simply being there, the military police would come out and would arrest him. And so this happened a lot. But one particular time, this is right before the Supreme Court hearing, it got into the papers, and there is on the front page of the Santa Maria Times, Dennis getting handcuffed. And so Rosella is in class, and the teacher comes up to her with big tears in her eyes and said, I'm so sorry, your dad got arrested. And Rosella said, he did? So, because, you know, it's really an arrest. He's cited and then released, and that had happened the day before, and for Rosella it had happened so often that she didn't even know, you know? So, yeah, those are the awkward things that sometimes come with being an activist kid. Go ahead.
Thanks for your stories, including those of your children. Mm. And it sparked in me a curiosity to ask you, in your earlier years, pre-high school, let's say, what was it, who was it who gave you the grace, or whatever descriptor would help, the spark that gave you the freedom to do what you have done and are doing? Is there an event or a person?
Thank you. You know, I think the only way I could probably answer that is, you know, for me, I just always remember sort of like questioning. Like I was always questioning. I was the one in class. I mean, I remember as a little girl, like young, sitting in the religion class and the teacher going back and forth with me only for the entire religion class or religion period, whatever, 45 minutes, because I just always was hungry. And, you know, and I would sit in churches, and I went through, you know, a little 13-year-old dark night of the soul. I was convinced I was an atheist, but I'd still go and sit in church because it had meant something to me at some point, and I was just sort of waiting to see if it would happen again. And you know, 13 is in Catholic school when you do your first confirmation. And I didn't do it with my class because I was an atheist. All these people? Well, and then I realized that, wait a minute, they're not really going for confirmation. They're wanting to get a new dress, you know? And anyways, be that as it may, there's just always been a longing and a hungering deep within. And, you know, and it's always like I really am fascinated by people's stories. And, you know, and so when you're young, you're almost kind of walking in this blind faith. But as you get older, it starts, oh, wait a minute, this is me. This is me. This is me, and yet this isn't about me, you know, because this is something working through me. And, so, you know, and I also just want to say that I was also fortunate to have a mother that, you know, didn't put stops, you know, or, you know, she didn't have to have me be anything. And my father died when I was young, but I must say that there is a freedom with that as well. So, yeah. So, thank you all. I just want to end. It took a lot for me to come up here today. Poor Dennis, he hasn't slept well, because I have not slept well in many, many, many days. And I was just thinking, like, what do I have to offer? What do I have to offer? But what I think is most important that we all walk away from today, and it's what Roar so much speaks to, is that idea of belovedness. Who are we, and how does our life reflect that belovedness? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jensi. Great presentation, straight from the heart. You know, we have a wonderful occasion today. It's the 95th birthday of Helen Dean. Why don't we sing her? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Helen. Happy birthday to you. So thank you, and thanks very much, Dennis and Tensi, for your presence.